That's the first hour of our show. We've got a really exciting second hour coming up for you. We've got some more basketball coverage. We've got some NFL draft conversations, and we're going to catch you up on everything else that we've missed. But for now, if you're just tuning in, it is 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio here at the University of Maryland in College Park. My name is Jack Wynn. You are listening to Winning Time on 90.5, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV area. This is the second hour of our show. We had a very eventful first hour. We just wrapped it up with some conversation on Maryland sports, and we are very excited to get into this next group of topics. But before we do, quick couple of messages, and we will be right back with you after this.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
All right, welcome back in. So, one of the biggest stories in sports right now is the upcoming NBA playoffs, specifically the matchup between two all-time legends. The Los Angeles Lakers, who are slotted as the 3 seed, take on the 6-seeded Houston Rockets. The 4 versus the 5 seed matchup. Either way, Lakers versus Rockets, LeBron James versus Kevin Durant once again. It's the first time the two have ever faced off against each other in the playoffs that wasn't in the finals. These two have played in 3 different final series. Obviously, Kevin Durant won the last two when he came to Golden State. LeBron won that first one in Miami when Kevin Durant was with Oklahoma City. And now, all these years later, they face off again. Nearly 14 years since their first playoff matchup. So, what can we expect from these two all-time greats? What have we seen? Well, all-time, as I mentioned, these two are LeBron's 41, Kevin Durant's 37. They're getting up there in age. They've played nearly 50 times. And LeBron James holds a 26-20 record against Kevin Durant all-time. More wins than losses. He averages in those games 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists on incredible efficiency. Kevin Durant doesn't shrink from the moment, averaging 29 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists on his own. So these two always come to play. They very rarely put up stinkers, and the games are very often close. I wouldn't expect any less from most of this playoff series. Now, in the playoffs, the two get even better. Granted, something to note is these stats are from their primes. This is Heat and Thunder. This is Heat and Cavs LeBron and Thunder and Warriors KD. They're obviously much older now. As I mentioned, nearly a decade and a half since the first time they played in the playoffs. But Durant does hold a 9-5 record against LeBron all-time in the playoffs. And Kevin Durant really goes off in these moments. 32 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists on 50-40-90 efficiency. If you're not familiar with the term, 50% field goal percentage, 40% from 3, 90% from the free throw line. Very difficult to do, and KD averages that when he plays against LeBron in the playoffs. Granted, LeBron doesn't shrink from the moment either. 32 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, nearly a 30-point triple-double from LeBron in these matchups. The point is this. We've seen these two face off. We've seen these two be great. We've seen these two be great when they face off. And now we get one last chance to see them battle again. It's going to be very entertaining. Now, unfortunately, as has been the case in each of their last playoff matchups, the fight's not exactly fair. When the two faced off for the first time, the Thunder were actually the favorites in that series. It was a young team, It was Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden taking on a Miami Heat squad that was coming off of a humiliating finals defeat the year before. Granted, what we know now is that that Miami Heat team was an all-time great team. They beat the Thunder in five games, Dwayne Wade and LeBron were dominant, Chris Bosh had great flashes, and Kevin Durant wasn't able to do enough with it. The next two times they matched up, it was clearly outmatched. Kevin Durant had joined Golden State, played with Steph Curry, created what is the greatest team in basketball history, the 2017 Golden State Warriors. And they ran through those Cavs teams in five games and then swept them. So, although we've seen individually great performances from both of these players, we haven't really gotten a truly fair fight in the playoffs from them. And it seemed like we were heading to have one this year because the Lakers were playing really well towards the end of the season. The Rockets were the 2 seed last year and added Kevin Durant. So there was a lot of optimism about finally getting an even matchup. And then Luka Doncic goes down, and then Austin Reeves goes down, and all of a sudden, once again, it's this Rockets team, which has been playing really good all season, added Kevin Durant after having success, versus LeBron James pretty much on his own. Now, I said in my opening prediction segment of the show that I thought the Rockets would win this series in seven games. And I stand by that. It may be six, but I do think it goes seven. I think that we are going to see a couple of really high-scoring outbursts from LeBron. He's been flirting with a big game for a couple of weeks now, ever since he dropped that 30 bomb with near-perfect efficiency, followed up by a triple-double. It's been, back in mid-March, it's been clear that he's taking his game to another level. What we saw from LeBron to start the season is not the LeBron that we're getting come playoff time. He's been saving his energy. He knows his body better than anybody. He takes care of himself better than anybody. And I think that he's been pacing his play to really start to ramp up these playoffs. Now that Luka and AR are out, he understands the load is back on himself. He's made comments about that. He says that he's comfortable being in these positions because he's been there a million times before, which is true. And it's hard to say that he can't do it, because there have been so many times throughout his career that LeBron's been doubted or the odds have been stacked against him, and he's come through and won anyway. There is one thing that I think the Lakers have as an advantage over Houston, which is that experience and leadership from LeBron James. This is a trope that we've seen between LeBron and KD throughout their history together. When KD went to Golden State, it was masked by the presence of Steph Curry. But every time since then, it's been a recurring issue for KD. When LeBron came into the league, he embraced the role of being the Cavalier savior. He wanted leadership. He wanted to step up, and he was comfortable being in a position where people were relying and dependent on him. He had been there his whole life. Kevin Durant, when he was drafted, had an unprecedented passion for basketball and just playing the sport and wanting to get better at just hooping and enjoying and appreciating the game. The two have taken very different approaches when it comes to winning. LeBron James learned how to win following Dwayne Wade and then learned how to lead on his own. He was the driving force of those two Miami Heat championship teams. He overcame adversity, and he becomes an emotional leader in times of trouble for his for the Lakers now. When the games are close, who's the guy who's leading the huddle? It's LeBron. Who's the guy drawing up plays and inbounding the ball? It's LeBron. Who's making sure that everybody's tapped in? Who's holding his teammates accountable? Who is making sure that people are in their positions on defense and are getting to their spots on offense? It's LeBron every time. KD has never been like that. He's been focused on his own job, getting his buckets, trying to hope his team comes through. Kevin Durant believes that leadership is the responsibility of the coach, which is a very fair take, but what we have seen is if you want to be an all-time legend and you want to take your game and your team to another level, you have to be a leader as well. And Kevin Durant has not embraced that. So, seeing now how this may play out in the upcoming playoff series, you have to think about the impact it will have on each of their teams. When the games are close, or if the Rockets have a bad stretch, we have seen plenty of clips of them in those moments throughout the season, sulking on the bench, sitting by themselves, isolated, not really sure what to do or how to get over it. When the Lakers have been in those same moments, they rally together. And if that happens in these playoff series, where it's crunch time, or a team is going on a big run, and it's a timeout and you need to rally your team and get them going, I trust the Lakers to do that more. And that's why I think the Lakers could steal a few games. Do I think LeBron's going to have, you know, three 35-plus scoring nights? No, I don't. But do I think we're going to get a couple of games here or there where the role players on the Lakers play way above expectation? I do. And I think LeBron's leadership and experience is a big part of that. I also think we're likely to see some of the Rockets' role players take steps back. So, just worth noting. Now, who would this win mean for? Or who would this win mean more for? It would obviously mean more for LeBron. For Kevin Durant, a first-round playoff win really doesn't do much, especially not against this depleted Lakers team. What would do something for Kevin Durant is if he won in the second round, and he managed to get through to the conference finals. He hasn't been past round two since he left Golden State. And it's really put his legacy in jeopardy because people wonder how much of a driving force he was for those championships. For LeBron, this means a lot. Showing that even at age 41, even after all of this, playing more games, more minutes than any player ever, scoring more points than any player ever, still being able to get it done and carry a team, raise the floor of everybody else, improve your teammates' play, rally them behind you, that would be a legendary accomplishment. This, from a support perspective, is one of the worst teams that LeBron's had around him. When Luka and Austin Reeves aren't there, it's really just LeBron and really nobody else. If he does this at 41 years old, it's just another incredible accomplishment on his belt. It wouldn't really change the way I view him, because I view him as high as you can. I think he's the greatest basketball player of all time. He may even be the greatest athlete of all time. If he wins a playoff series by himself at 41 years old, he's absolutely in the greatest athlete of all time conversations. And I would love to see that play out somehow. But I don't think either team really has a chance to go on a run. I think that this series is going to be the pinnacle of the season for each of these teams. Also, granted the way the bracket plays out, whoever wins is going to match up with the Thunder, which as far as I'm concerned is a death sentence. Oklahoma City is just so much better than either one of these squads. And after a battle in the first round, I don't see how they would then compete with a team like the Thunder and a player like Shea. But that's what makes this series so much more exciting. That's what makes every single game of this series that much more important. Not to mention, LeBron has been flirting with retirement the entire season in his post-game press conferences, in his social media posts, in his body language, what his family says. This may be the last we see LeBron play professionally in the NBA. And if that's the case, I highly recommend not missing a single second of it. Appreciate it while it's still here, while we know he's still going to be giving everything he's got, and while we still have, in my opinion, at least three high-level LeBron games, at least two high-level LeBron games left. If the series goes to six or more games, I think we'll get a third one. But I'm glad that we've gotten to see him kind of have this last push in his career, show that he's got more left in the tank, because what we saw from him for the first few months of the season was really disappointing and underwhelming. It wasn't the LeBron that we had seen. He was playing a third option role, and he was kind of just getting himself situated. But what we've seen from him since mid-March is a player that can be a real contributor to a contender. And if he gets this done, and if he plays at the level that I think he can, maybe he reconsiders coming back. Or maybe he ends on a high note. I'm not sure. I don't want LeBron to go out in poor taste. Kobe Bryant ended his career with a 60-point game. Peyton Manning ended his career in a Super Bowl. I like when legends end their careers properly. I hope that LeBron gets the chance to do it. All right. That is our Lakers Rockets / LeBron versus KD preview. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're catching you up on a lot of the most important stories that we're not going to have time for later in the show with a segment I call High Speed Headlines. Coming at you fast after this.
The Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Did you know that the University of Maryland is one of the 50 fittest colleges in America? Our state-of-the-art Epley Recreation Center, School of Public Health, Ritchie Coliseum, and Cole Fieldhouse have a number of resources that help keep Terps happy, active, and healthy. Join the daily group fitness workouts, request a personal trainer, or own your independence and build your own training plan. Exercise can improve muscle strength and boost your endurance and confidence. Feel better and live longer.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
All right, welcome back in. You're listening to Winning Time here on WMUC FM Radio out of College Park. We have got a lot to talk about. It's been a fun show so far. We are moving into a segment that I call High Speed Headlines. And this is for one when there's a lot of fun sports stories, not a lot of time to really get into it, but we're going to do a quick overview and a quick deep dive on it regardless. So, how the segment works, I'm going to set a 10-minute timer. We have got 10 topics for you lined up. I'm going to try to keep it within the time. We're going to get through all of them. And that time starts now. First off, Drake May says he is excited to return, but, quote, understands how difficult it may be. Referring to the Super Bowl, of course. And this one I thought was an interesting story, because he's right. It is really hard to get back to a Super Bowl, and we've seen a lot of young quarterbacks come onto the scene, make a Super Bowl, and then fall off. Joe Burrow hasn't been back to the Super Bowl since he made it a couple years ago. A bunch of other players, Dan Marino is the most famous example, a couple players there early on. Even though Aaron Rodgers won it, he was never able to get back. The idea that you can win a Super Bowl, or excuse me, get to a Super Bowl and you're just expected to return there is not a sound thought. So understanding that Drake May is prepared for this, he knows that the hangover may be coming. He is going to put in extra preparation this offseason to make sure he comes back, not just at the same level, but at a higher level, should be very encouraging for Patriots fans. Next, the Mets lose 6 in a row. And I just don't even know what to say at this point. They've hit such a slump. And I, as somebody who cheers for the Mets, seeing them just continue to struggle is really hard. They made the conference finals recently, and this team is just totally lost in the water. Dropped one to the Dodgers again yesterday. They are now 7-10 on the season. Speaking of the Dodgers, Max Muncy has a game with 3 home runs, bringing the Dodgers all the way back, handing Edwin Diaz his first blown save of the season. The Dodgers have been so good. As I mentioned, they just beat the Mets yesterday. They are 12-4 on the year. I expect them to repeat. I think that they are probably going to come through and win the World Series this year. Once again, I don't really see any team that would stand in their way. Next, the UCLA Bruins women's team had all 5 players drafted in the WNBA this week. This is an incredibly impressive accomplishment. UCLA was a team where all 5 starters were seniors. They had grown together, and they won a championship together this season. And now all 5 of them are headed to the league. They're going to be professionals. I'm excited to see them play against each other. You know, get those moments to reunite, come back. Next, Jimmy Butler posts on his Instagram that he's questionable for the play-in game, and he tags Shams in his caption. I thought this was just a funny moment. It's always cool, or it's always a little gimmicky when the reporters break stories before the players are informed of things. I remember there were a few times where Adam Schefter would break a story about a player being either ruled out or questionable, and the player would retweet and be like, "What are you talking about? I didn't know I was ruled out." So Jimmy Butler beat Shams to the punch this time. He's been injured. He's been banged up. And he posted that he was going to be questionable for tonight's game. So I just thought it was a little funny bit. We'll see if Shams plays along with it. Next, Con Knupple, the superstar rookie with the Charlotte Hornets, edges out LaMelo Ball for the most 3-pointers made this season. Knupple, as a rookie, led the league in threes. He beat his teammate by 1 3-pointer. The two are one of the best shooting backcourts in the NBA. They are an incredibly dynamic pair. And this little mini competition between the two of them to see who would end up with a 3-point title has been very entertaining. I'm personally really glad that Khan ended up with it. I think that's really fun. It's a great accomplishment for a rookie. And although I still think Cooper Flagg had the better overall rookie season, and I think he's the better player, Con Knupple could have been Rookie of the Year any other season. He is a very impactful player for this Hornets team, and now he has an accomplishment to show it. Next, Doc Rivers steps down as head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. This one, I was surprised he stepped down. I expected him to be fired. I suppose stepping down makes more sense. We'll see how this impacts what happens for the next stage of his career, whether he decides to go into broadcasting or if he takes a front office position somewhere. I would expect him to go to the front office lane. He has a lot of connections throughout the league. He's been on a few different teams. He has shown an ability to at least run an organization. He just kind of lacks that ability to coach a team to win, which is fairly important when you're the coach of a basketball team. His tenure with the Bucks was incredibly underwhelming. He's recognized as an all-time coach because he won that title with the Celtics in 2008. But He really hasn't shown us much since then. He's come up short several times. He's blown multiple 3-1 leads, the only coach to ever do so in the playoffs. He's blown a dozen 2-0 leads and 3-2 leads. Just not somebody who's able to close out games. And I really didn't understand the hire in the moment, because the Bucks were supposed to be trying to capitalize on the Giannis era, and they just completely failed to do so. Not only did they not get back to where they were before they fired their previous head coach, Mike Budenholzer, they got worse. And now Giannis is probably going to be on the move this upcoming offseason. Next, the Braves and the Angels get in a brutal fistfight during one of their games last week. This one was crazy. The dugouts were clearing. People had to get in the way and break them up. Fighting is always crazy in sports. I really only like it in combat sports and hockey. We don't need fighting in football. We don't need fighting in basketball. We don't need fighting in baseball. Granted, it's fun. It's kind of entertaining to see. You just want the players to be okay. I like physical play. I like when it gets chippy. But just straight up fist fights where people get suspended and thrown out, that just ruins the game. Keep it PG, you know? All right, next. The Green Bay Packers are reportedly interested in Marvin Harrison Jr. They called about him. And I thought that was an interesting story. I don't really get what the Packers are doing at wide receiver. They haven't really had a system that has made sense ever since Jordan Love came in. Or you know what? We'll predate that. When Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback and when he was winning MVPs, they had Devontae Adams and a semi-decent receiving core around him. Then they trade Devontae Adams because they don't want to pay him. Then Rodgers leaves. They haven't gotten a true number one since then. And that was nearly a half decade ago. I mean, Jaden Reed is a very good player. Dontavian Wicks, great player. Christian Watson, very talented player, great deep ball threat. You've got a lot of great guys there. But they recognized last year that they needed to improve at the wide receiver one position, which is why they spent their first round pick on a wide receiver. Matthew Golden was supposed to be the number one for them. He is blazing fast. He has incredible hands, and he's remarkably shifty. But for whatever reason, they were unable to get him on the field and use him properly. And as someone who was really cheering for the kid, this really disappointed me, because I think Golden had a really high ceiling, and if the Packers just knew how to use a primary receiver, I think he could really break out. But because LaFleur runs a system where you're just looking for quicker reads, finding what's open, running guys all over the field, you don't really have a primary target. So it's hard for somebody to thrive in that environment, which is why I don't understand trading for Marvin Harrison Jr. Somebody who hasn't proven he can be an automatic number one, he would just kind of fit back into the same system that Green Bay has. If someone's going to trade for MHJ, I hope it's a team that's going to give him the darn ball. All right, last topic here with about a minute left. The Texans pick up the fifth-year options of both Will Anderson Jr. and C.J. Stroud. This doesn't surprise anybody. Everyone expected it. These are two stars, two franchise cornerstones. But what this moment represents is the success of a new era. Because the Houston Texans were kind of lost. They had the whole era with Deshaun Watson, which got squandered after he turned out to be a monster. Fortunately, they were able to trade him for Cleveland for way more than they should have been. And they used those assets to completely rebuild their team. They held the second overall pick, which they used on their franchise quarterback, C.J. Stroud. Granted, he struggled recently, but we've still seen a lot of flashes from him, especially early on in his career. They then traded up to the third pick. They picked back-to-back in the top three and took Will Anderson Jr., who has turned into one of the most prolific pass rushers in the league today. So both of them will be with Houston for an extra year. They'll have a little more wiggle room to negotiate these contracts as they lock him down for the rest of the decade. So, I'm excited to see how Houston plays next year. Their defense was simply remarkable, and I would imagine they're putting in work to improve the offense, because C.J. Stroud does not just fall off a cliff like he did. I really hope they're able to fix it. That's our high-speed headlines segment. We took you through a ton of different topics. I hope we're able to follow. And we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, we are talking about the NFL draft. We're about halfway through the first hour of our show. Excited to close this one out.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taws Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
Care to Stop Violence is a campus resource housed in UMD's University Health Center. The CARE office provides free, confidential advocacy and therapy services for survivors of sexual assault, relationship violence, stalking, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their supporters can make an appointment with a trained advocate or call our 24/7 hot crisis line to speak to someone right away. Additionally, we work to empower the campus community to prevent power-based violence through educational presentations, events, and outreach activities. Learn more about our available services and programs by visiting health.umd.edu/care.
When might you be buzzed?
Start a startup with other startups at Startup Shell. Get started at startupshell.org.
No one man should have all that culture, but this club can, you know we got the most, FCA's got GBMs every other Thursday.
FCA at UMD.com.
Wow, I am obsessed with that last one. I wasn't exactly sure how that one was going to present when I played the PSA, but absolutely fired up to hear more about that club now. Okay. We've got a little under 30 minutes left here in the second hour of our show. And we are going to shift. We've talked a lot of basketball. We spent the high-speed headlines topic spreading across the course of sports. The sports landscape, excuse me. And now we're going to take it back to the NFL. Because it is draft season. The draft is coming up in just a couple of weeks. And everybody's curious as to where the top prospects are going to end up. So, we are going to do a bit of a dual segment here. I'm going to give you my mock draft, not a full one, just the top 10. And we're going to play a game that I call Trust or Bust. And how it works is I'm going to name a prospect that I think is going to be picked by the team. And then I'm going to tell you if I trust them to be a great player in the league or to turn that team around, or if I think that they're going to bust and not work out and be a poor or underwhelming player that doesn't get another contract. Simple enough. Simple enough. All right. Starting off, number one overall, it is Fernando Mendoza to the Raiders. And this one is as close to shoo-in as anything. There it is. Fernando Mendoza to the Raiders. I think that this one's as close to a shoo-in as anything. He had an unbelievable season at Indiana. He has really proven himself as a franchise quarterback. I absolutely trust him, and I think that he is perfect, not just for that team, but for that city. He speaks fluent Spanish when he's living in Las Vegas. That's certainly helpful. Not to mention, he is seemingly flawless off the field. He studies his Bible. He stays home. He doesn't like to go out or drink or gamble. And if you're the franchise quarterback of a Las Vegas football team, those are all things that are really helpful and really promising. You absolutely do not want your young first overall pick quarterback going out onto the town all the time, getting too caught up in the culture. You want him focusing on football, focusing on himself. And that's exactly what you get from Mendoza. So I trust him off the field, which is one of the most important things when it comes to picking a franchise quarterback. because leadership from that position is as important as anything else. I think I trust him on the field, because he has shown time and time again that he's a winning player and that he's remarkably talented. He's very accurate. He can move really well in the pocket, and he sees the field really well. He understands what the defense is showing him. If not pre-snap, while the play is happening, he's good at adjusting on the fly. He's a little mobile, and I think he's going to fit in really well. It's clear that this is going to be the pick. He won the Heisman. He won the Natty. For the Raiders, this really is a franchise-changing decision here, because bringing in a quarterback first overall sets the tone for the next half decade of your franchise. They have spent the last few years building up infrastructure for this moment. Acquiring Ashton Jeanty, the superstar running back last year. Drafting Brock Bowers. A tight end is known as the quarterback's best friend. Blocks for him, reliable in the short game. Physical player. Those are things that are going to help Mendoza, having two other superstars on offense with him. Not to mention, the Raiders have been investing much more heavily in the offensive line. They signed Tyler Linderbaum, an excellent center from the Ravens. They made a couple other moves I expect them to draft along the offensive line as well. They signed a couple of cornerbacks and players on the defensive line that I like that I'm spacing on at the moment. But I think that this is a really exciting and young Raiders team. And there's optimism about the Raiders for the first time in a while. I was a little overzealous on them last year because I was foolish enough to believe in Pete Carroll and Geno Smith, even though they were both actively turning into fossils before our eyes. But instead, they get Mendoza, Jeanty, and Bowers, and the Raiders are trying to move forwards. All right, so that's the first pick. Now number two. The New York Jets will be taking David Bailey, the edge rusher from Texas Tech. He is a remarkable athlete and incredible player. Now, this is a change from what I expected, because I didn't put out a formal mock draft, but a lot of people have thought this was going to be Arvel Reese, the edge rusher from Ohio State. But all of the recent reporting is that the Jets have been gaining more and more interest in David Bailey, that he's been gaining more traction. He's been having good visits with the front office. And for some teams, I would say, oh, that's a smokescreen. You know, they're trying to boost up the stock of this one player to either increase trade value, dissuade people from pursuing the guy they actually want, whatever the trick may be. But the Jets aren't smart enough for that. They're the Jets. They're just trying to figure it out. All this reporting is probably accurate. We've seen that time and time again with when they were drafting Zach Wilson. It was the exact same thing. So I do think they're going to take David Bailey. I don't hate the pick either, by the way. I think Bailey is going to be a great player. He is a remarkably explosive athlete. He is quick off the edge. He struggles a little bit at times in the run game, but I think the upside is so high as a pass rusher and as a leader, that it could be worth the second pick if he hits the ceiling. Problem is, Jets need players to surround him with, and they've kind of depleted this roster. They don't really have great coaching either. So we'll see if Bailey can maybe be the start of something. Next, the Arizona Cardinals. I think they then take Arvel Reese, the edge rusher from Ohio State. He is a little bit of a more well-rounded player than Bailey is. He's a very effective run defender. He's not as explosive of a pass rusher, but he's still really good at getting to the quarterback. He's a strong and imposing physical player as well. He can play kind of along the defensive line. He can drop back into coverage. So a very good player. I think that he fits what the Cardinals are trying to do well. The Cardinals are trying to revamp, rebuild, create a new culture, and that starts by having a star defender to set the tone for your team on the defensive line. You need great trench play, and Arvel Reese can be the captain of that defense. I think he's going to be an impact player for Arizona. Granted, they're not going to be close to competing next year. That division is brutal. Seattle, obviously the defending Super Bowl champions. The 49ers were knocking on the door, and the Rams were as good as anybody else this past season. I mean, they They had the Seahawks on the ropes a couple of times. But this is a step in the right direction for Arizona if they end up going this way. Next, the Tennessee Titans. Now, this is another situation where I feel like a lot of the reporting is just going to be accurate because I don't trust the front office that much. But anyway, here's the pick. I've got the Titans taking Jeremiah Love, the running back from Notre Dame. And as I mentioned, everything I'm hearing is that Tennessee is enamored with Jeremiah Love. They think he's an incredibly talented prospect, which he is. They think that he is going to help Cam Ward, which he probably would. But I don't think that Brian Daboll and Ryan Saleh are savvy enough to handle the smokescreen season. I think that the report probably got out, and that's why it's been stuck to so much. We know Brian Daboll likes his dynamic running backs. He had a lot of success with Saquon Barkley. He had success with James Cook in Buffalo. He had success with Tyrone Tracy even after Saquon left. Just trying to pull something out of nothing from the running back position. Daboll understands not just the importance of the running game to establish the run, but the importance of the play-action pass, because he loves his options. He likes getting his quarterback moving around. He's going to be trying to do that with Cam Ward a lot. And if his running back is Tyjae Spears or some other late-round back that they acquire, that threat is not going to be the same for defenses. You're not going to bite on the options or the fake handoffs as much as you would if it was someone as dynamic as Jeremiah Love. Now, Jeremiah Love is clearly a top five level talent in this draft class. He is not only a remarkably quick and shifty runner, but he's a powerful runner and an incredible receiver as well. You can move him along the offense. I'm just so opposed to drafting running backs this high. It very, very rarely works out for the team that drafts them. What we see is the running back ends up being awesome, but the team never does anything. Saquon with the Giants, awesome player, didn't accomplish anything. Christian McCaffrey with the Panthers, awesome player, couldn't accomplish anything until he went to San Francisco. So many instances of this. Leonard Fournette didn't do anything till he went to Tampa Bay. All these top five running backs. Bijan Robinson, still yet to do something notable in the league. Okay, I'll stop. But the point is, running backs are complementary pieces. They are guys that raise your ceiling, but they do not raise your floor. And if you are a team like the Titans, who is just trying to break into the league and, you know, be competitive again after the last few years of not even being close to it, I don't see how a running back is going to help you. Unless you're that confident in the other investments you've made in the team and in Cam Ward's development, I just don't see how a running back would be more effective than an offensive lineman or a defensive centerpiece, especially in a draft where there are so many of those kinds of players. Next, number five, the New York Giants. This is my favorite team, and also the team that I had the hardest time picking, but I've got the New York Giants selecting Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State. I think that John Harbaugh is looking for a player like Caleb Downs. I was between him and Sonny Styles, because if there's something we know about Harbaugh and this kind of Ravens culture that he comes from, they like having their captains on defense who are smart, athletic, and versatile. Ed Reed and Ray Lewis are the most famous example, but even after that, what he had recently with Roquan Smith and Kyle Hamilton, two of the best linebackers and then safeties in the league. I would imagine John Harbaugh wants to start building out the same kind of structure. That is a recipe for winning, it's a recipe for more organization, and a closer feeling on defense. Not to mention, the Giants' secondary desperately needs help. Desperately. The pass rush is good. The front seven is good. They could use some help at inside linebacker, but there is a lot to be done with the corners and safeties. Caleb Downs is an incredible athlete. He's a very smart player. He is strong, and he's fast. He's also good at being aware. He can read a quarterback. He can read an offense, and he's just a dynamic player. He's one of the only players in the last half decade of college football to line up at as many positions as he did. He lined up in the nickel. He lined up at the dime corner. He was in the free safety, strong safety, box safety, inside linebacker. He was on the edge at one point. Just an incredibly versatile player. I think he'd fit right in with what John Harbaugh wants to do. Next. Number 6, the Cleveland Browns. I've got them taking Carnell Tate, wide receiver from OSU. This is one that I think a lot of people expect. This has been in a lot of different mock drafts. Again, I don't really get the process here, but it's what they'll probably do. Carnell Tate is too good of a player to slide, I think, as much as he would if he doesn't get picked here. And the Browns need weapons. They need a lot of things, but they're really lacking at receiver. And Carnell Tate is a player who's going to come in, play like a high-end wide receiver 2 right away, and probably blossom into a low-end wide receiver 1 within the first few years of his career. We'll see where he can go from there, but he's got really reliable hands. He's got really good footwork. He's not the fastest or the quickest, but he's reliable. He reminds me a bit of like a Larry Fitzgerald, not Larry Fitzgerald, like a Mike Evans type, but you know what? More of a Devontae Adams type, I think, is how I view him. And if he's able to hit that ceiling, then great, and maybe he's worth the pick. But in a draft where, once again, defensive stars, defensive captains, offensive linemen, so many of them in this draft, a team like the Browns need to build the infrastructure. I know you want the new shiny toy. You want the running back. You want the receiver. You want the player who's going to come in, sell jerseys. You need football players, guys who are going to build a roster. Next, the Washington Commanders. I have them taking Sonny Styles, the linebacker that I thought might go to the Giants. And if Sonny Styles does go to the Giants, I would expect Caleb Downs then to go to the Commanders. Both the Giants and Commanders have issues at linebacker and in the secondary. And for Washington, a team that was the oldest in the league last season, was trying really hard to capitalize on what felt like a magical run the year before in Jaden Daniels' rookie year, and came up unbelievably short. They need a reset. They need guys who are going to build a culture and build an identity. Sonny Styles is going to do exactly that. He is one of the best athletes in this draft. His performance at the Combine was historic. He was one of the highest rated at his position at the 40-yard dash, the vertical jump, the broad jump, the bench press, the three-cone drill, the four-cone shuttle, all of it. He's also a smart player. He'll be the captain of your defense. I think that Washington could really use him, and you can really start to build out the rest of that unit around a guy like Sonny Styles because you know that he'll be reliable. Washington's got a long way to go. I do think that they can hit a bit of a jump once Jaden Daniels is back and not as banged up, because I think having a star quarterback makes a huge difference. But they got to get the rest of the roster set first. I think Sonny Styles is the first piece of that. Next, New Orleans Saints. I'll get the music. I have him taking Mansoor Delane, the cornerback, out of LSU. And this is a player who I think could go as high as 5 to the Giants as well. He is a very good cornerback. He's quick. He can play man coverage. He can play zone coverage. He's a good athlete. He can track the ball really well. He has good hands. Just a lot of what you want in a corner. I think if this draft weren't so stacked on the defensive side, you would see him going a lot higher. But the upside is absolutely there. He's one of those players that I think has a really high floor. I don't know how much of a world there is for him to bust. I really trust him. I think him to the Saints is a good pick. There were rumors about Jeremiah Love going to New Orleans if he slipped this far, which I think would be abysmal. I would think that would be a bust of a pick, but instead I trust Mansoor Delane to be the right move and to start rebuilding the Saints organization. Next, Kansas City Chiefs, picking inside the top 10 for the first, probably last time of the decade. I have them taking Reuben Bain Jr. from Miami. And this is going to be a controversial one, because Reuben Bain was projected to go in the top 5, even the top 3, as of a couple of weeks ago. But he had an off-the-field incident in a car that I think is going to really impact his draft stock. It's going to cause him to slip. some of these teams aren't going to be as comfortable drafting somebody with those off-the-field concerns, not to mention he has some physical drawbacks. He doesn't really have long arms, but he's probably the best run defender of any edge in this class. He has a lot of upside as a pass rusher if he's able to figure out some of the kinks in his game. I think the Chiefs would be thrilled to have him. He's a great player. I could also see them going Jordan Tyson here to shore up the receiving core. The Chiefs are the first team that I think it would be justified to take a running back or receiver because they've already built out that foundation. They have a solid roster. But what we know about the Chiefs is that they're always prone to doubling down on this. They want to get better. I think they add the edge rush talent. I think they want to continue to improve the defense. I think they go offensive line or receiver throughout the rest of the draft afterwards. And now wrapping up the top 10 of our mock draft. I do trust that pick by the Chiefs, by the way. The Cincinnati Bengals. I think that they take Spencer Fano, the offensive lineman, and I think that this should be a layup, but somehow the Bengals are going to mess it up. I could see them taking Jeremiah Love. I could see them doing something weird with this pick, maybe trading out of it. But you have an opportunity to get an offensive lineman, continue to shore that up for Joe Burrow, because you have to protect him. You can't keep playing the same game every year where you double down at skill positions and on certain spots of the defense, and you leave your best players unprotected. Spencer Fano can play a couple spots along the offensive line. I would trust this pick a lot. I think Burrow would be thrilled. They could also go Francis Malaga, who's another really great offensive lineman. He could go in the top five. Either of these guys could go really high in the draft, but I think this is the best spot for him. All right. That is our top 10. To recap, we trust Mendoza to the Raiders. We trust Bailey, but we don't trust the Jets. We don't trust Arvil Reese to the Cardinals because the culture, they've got a long way to go. We don't trust Jeremiah Love to the Titans. We trust the player, don't trust the organization drafting a running back. We trust Caleb Downs fitting into the culture in New York. We don't trust Carnell Tate having to work with nothing else in Cleveland. We trust Sonny Styles setting the culture for the Commanders. We trust Mansoor Delane being one of the better cornerbacks in the league within the next few years. We trust the Chiefs to handle the process right. And we don't trust the Bengals to take Spencer Fano, but if they do, we would trust the pick. That's our recap. That's our top 10 mock draft. That was a lot. I hope you enjoyed. I love doing the in-depth conversations about some of these picks. We'll do more draft coverage as we get closer to it. But we've got a little less than 10 minutes left in our show now. We're going to take one quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some hot takes, and we're going to give a brief Stanley Cup preview. Haven't talked about hockey in a while. All that after this.
Call Health Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help
me? The Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu.
All right, welcome back in. We've got just about a little over 5 minutes left in our show here. It's been a fun one. We've talked about a wide range of topics, our NBA preview, an NFL mock draft. We talked about the WNBA draft. an NBA draft preview. We got into the Masters history. A lot of different topics. A lot that we went over. But as we wrap up this show, we're going to turn our attention to the NHL. Because the Stanley Cup playoffs are set to start this weekend after the regular season officially wraps up. And I want to give you my predictions. Because it's been a fun season so far. I can't say that I'm not the biggest hockey fan, but I do love the sport, and I've gotten to know it a lot better as I've talked with people who are true fans. So, there's one really great team in the league right now. You've got the Avalanche, who had a historic season. They had over 115 points on the year, and they can do pretty much everything. They're great on defense, they're fast, they're young, and I think they're expected to go on and win the title. They're heavy favorites right now in Vegas for good reason. I have them coming out of their conference. But I have them matching up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I know the Lightning are a controversial pick for where they're at right now, but I do still believe in their veteran talent, and I think that they'll be able to get it done. You still have Kucherov. You still have guys like Braden Point, some of the other veterans on that roster. And I think that it would be a very fun series. I think the Avalanche come through in the end, because when you have an all-time great team like that, it's hard to see them losing. And if Tampa Bay does get there like I expect them to, it would be a grueling playoff run, and they would have to play pretty perfectly to survive that one and go on to win the Stanley Cup. So I've got the Avalanche getting it done in six games in the Stanley Cup final. All right, just a couple minutes left here. We're going to go with a couple of hot takes, but we're really just going to focus the conversation around one. I want to talk about Bruce Brown. Bruce Brown was a player who could have been in contention for Sixth Man of the Year, or at least NBA award ballots. He is an impactful player on the Nuggets. He's a good rebounder. He's a good defender. He brings a lot of important energy to the team, especially in critical moments. He's moved around. But Bruce Brown played all 82 games this season. Didn't miss a game. But since he didn't play at least 20 minutes in 65 of the games, he becomes ineligible. And it's really disappointing, because he's somebody who could have been recognized for those accolades. And it's really just, he wasn't really going to win big awards. But what it does is it represents more of the flaws in this new system. The 65-game rule needs to be looked at and adjusted. There's no reason that a player like Luka Doncic, who played 64 games and missed a couple here or there with an injury, needs to be appealing the league to be eligible for awards. Some people may think it's silly. Some people may say that, you know, basketball awards and league awards are not important. But what I would say is that years and years from now, when we're not around to talk about what we saw this season, and the people look back on the history of the league, they're going to look at these records to know who was the best. The same way we do now, when we look back at the 60s and we talk about what Wilt and Bill Russell and all these all-time legends, Kareem, Oscar Robertson, what they accomplished, we're not going to have the same resources that people back then did, but we know what the voters thought. We know where they ranked on the award ballots at the end of the year, who was seen as being the best player at their position in the league. And this rule, while it's intended to encourage more frequent and better play, is going to take away from the legacies of a lot of these great players. I hope that the NBA is able to do something to adjust properly. I gave my award ballot at the top of the show. I don't think anything would change whether or not this rule was in place, but we need to prevent something like this from happening and impacting the way the game is seen. I love sports. I love the legacies. It's all an important part of it. All right, that's our show. We're coming up on the 2 o'clock hour now, so I'm going to wrap up. I'm already looking forward to next week's episode. Thanks for tuning in. I've been Jack Wynn. You've been listening to Winning Time here in WMUC.
I can. I got us both ice cream.
Cool.
Hi Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
I got us both ice cream.
Cool.